live on John. And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets along the way. We're going to get into a numerous amount of subjects over the next 60 minutes. Pro Football Focus just released and ranked its top NFL team secondaries as a unit overall. And the Giants are right up there. So we'll get into that. But it's also important to note the criteria that they utilize when they put those rankings together. And as we've been promoting here on Giants.com, 30 questions in 30 days is our key feature leading up to training camp. We're going to start answering those questions on this program, and we want to hear how you would weigh in to a number of these questions. It pretty much covers just about every storyline imaginable in terms of the makeup of the roster, the matchups, and everything else to watch coming into training camp.
Well, remember, there are 90 guys on the roster right now, and there's a bunch of guys at each of the units who will start, who will reserve, and also guys who won't be here. So certainly a lot of leeway in terms of what your answers might be for some of those questions.
Now, before we get to that, let's start with Pro Football Focus's rankings. And I know this caught your eye before we came onto the program, and they tweeted this out recently. So they put together their ranks for – now, this is the entire secondary. They're taking into consideration the corners as well as the safeties. We had done a show earlier this year, NFL.com ranked the best corner tandems, and the Giants were right up there in the top three, but Denver got the edge in terms of just looking at the cornerback.
Giants were number two on that ranking.
Right behind the Broncos. This group now is looking at corners and safeties combined, but the focus seems to be, and it's important to note, the Giants are number one, but they are really focusing in on coverage skills as opposed to taking into consideration run-stopping ability as well.
Well, you know, PFF being one of the leading analytics services in the NFL, and what they do with all of their different passer ratings, they're talking about targets, they're talking about yards per reception, completion percentage when thrown at different guys. These are all pass-oriented numbers. Now, Lance and I were just talking before the program started, and we're like, well, wait a minute. You know, there are guys who are very, very important in the rush defense. Corners who do support on the edge. There are safeties who play in the box, Landon Collins obviously being one of the premier guys who does that. And so, you know, I take this with a grain of salt, as I take all analytics rankings with a grain of salt. This one appears to be, if not completely, mostly based in passing stats. And they're ranking the Giants as the number one secondary in the National Football League, followed by the Patriots, the Seahawks, the Broncos, and the Falcons as the top five. Now, I think the interesting part here also is it looks as though from the graphics that they've posted, they are strictly going with the four starters as well. You know what? We all know in the National Football League, guys get dinged up.
Well, and that fifth or third corner is so
important.
Your
nickel package is huge.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, again, another reason to take this chart with a, how about not just a grain of salt? How about with a big bag of salt?
Yes.
Okay? Because as you've heard me say before, and I believe you've agreed, I think John has also, the Giants' fourth cornerback right now is a question mark for me. I understand Valentino Blake has played in the NFL before, but I am not very confident that should one of the Giants' top three corners go down, as DRC did in Green Bay, that they can sustain a high enough level of play to be a championship team without one of those guys. Well, I'm just not.
And that goes back to the Packers playoff game and what happened when DRC went down.
And so if you're going to rank secondaries, do you not have to, A, consider run support, okay, and B, do you not have to consider the nickel corner and maybe even the dime?
I don't even think it should be questioned, to be honest with you. I think if you want to do a true, fair evaluation, Paul, in this era of football, the pass-happy era of football, I think you have to take into consideration the additional corner, considering most often than not, you're going to have teams have that extra defensive back on the field. Let's face it. It's very rare that teams use three linebackers on every single down in today's NFL. That may have been the case 15 to 20 years ago. That's not the case today.
Well, let's simply just give the Giants graphic as an example. Okay, they're saying the Giants are number one, and they're giving a cover grade to DRC of 89.6, fourth best in the NFL. Jenkins at 87.8, eighth best. Collins, 83.2, 17th best. And Andrew Adams, 77.9, 38th best. Well, first of all, Andrew Adams may not even be the starting safety on this team this year because Darian Thompson could be the guy.
Majority of the snaps last season.
He did.
You can't grade Darian Thompson
Correct.
At this point anyway.
Correct. Yeah. So that in itself is kind of a flaw, but you can't overcome that one because that's the guy who played. But, again, if we go nickel corner, now are you putting Trevin Wade or Leon Hall, in the list as the fifth defensive back? And quite frankly, that's where it becomes more of an issue for the Giants. And Eli Apple's not even listed on this chart.
That's the guy that I was going to say you'd probably put in this group first. Eli Apple's not even graded and ranked. I mean, if you're going to make it a group of five, Paul, I think Eli Apple's the additional individual that you throw in there.
Well, the funny part about it is in their text underneath the graphic, it mentions last year's number 10 overall draft pick, Eli Apple, has his best football ahead of him. And then they list one of his allowed 11.4 receptions per snap when he was in coverage, was fifth best among all rookie cornerbacks last season. But then he's not in the graphic. So I'm not even sure how much they weighed him.
That's the big thing. And I'm looking through the paragraphs of some of these other teams. They're also mentioning players that are not a part of the graphic in terms of their grading system. So what I always find interesting is when anybody puts rankings together, it doesn't matter what the grouping is, what the position is, what the outlet is. I think it's important before the rankings even start, Paul, give the audience who's reading it or at least takes the time to read it, this is our main criteria. And this is what we looked at across the board for every single team. Other than that, that's why you have such big debates that are open-ended with all these rankings, because 99% of the time, people don't understand what went into the decision-making in terms of making this team first versus that team second.
Well, if you look at the graphic, just on the graphic itself, it says cover grade, and that's how they've ranked these
Correct.
Guys. That in itself is flawed because we all know that Landon Collins is a box safety. And his value to the Giants, yes, he picked off a lot of passes last year, and certainly the pick six against the Rams turned the whole season around. I'm not disputing that. But Landon Collins' value to the Giants is just as much against the run as it is against the pass. And if you just look at this chart, it doesn't look like there's anything to indicate that.
I'll even go back a little bit. I mean, when Prince Amukamara was here, people would talk about the coverage, but remember, Prince was really good against the run.
He was a good run stopper.
And when Prince was out of the lineup, you could tell the Giants' run defense took a hit because they relied on his play out of the secondary.
You don't think about this for a minute, Lance. And I don't want to take any credit away from Snacks Harrison because he had a sensational season clogging up the middle. But if you're an offensive coordinator and either you know you can't run up the middle against the Giants, or you tried to do it in the first half and you found little success, well, the obvious solution is, well, let's try to run to the outside. But the Giants' corners are pretty good at run support. You know, they got a safety in Landon Collins who goes sideline to sideline who helps stop the run no matter where you're trying to get the ball through. And Apple is good in run support. Jenkins, despite the fact that he's known for his tremendous coverage skills, he's not afraid to mix it up against the run at all. He's not afraid of anybody. Janoris Jenkins has a real attitude about him on the field. You know, he's not going to shy away from a run. And DRC, who's not known as a run support guy, you know, people say, you know, he's more of a finesse guy, more of a coverage guy, more of a ball hawk guy. That's all true. But DRC, he comes up and runs support, too. He may not make the big hit. He may not make the tackle. But what he does really well is he funnels guys. Guys try to get the edge on DRC. He gets out there and then funnels them back inside where a linebacker or a safety makes the tackle.
Sort of leads them to where there's assistance.
Yes. And he does that very well. He's not necessarily the guy who makes the tackle out there, but he does funnel them and close off gaps because he's very smart. So, I think the Giants' corners are vastly underrated in terms of their ability to help stop the run game. And that, to me, was really left unsaid during all of the headlines and accolades that their rush defense was getting, specifically Snacks. I think a lot of people left out the fact that the Giants' corners are much, much better against the run than most teams are.
No, I would agree with you. I think that if you evaluate why the defense made strides, the simple answer is, well, the arrival of Snacks. But the more complex and the answer that I think provides justice for the sake of the defense is, you're right, the combination of a variety of positions that came together and were in the right spots. And you could say
even
the same thing.
Even JPP off the edge.
Of course, with I think the fact that they don't even get enough credit for being well-rounded at that defensive end spot. But I'll take it a step further, Paul. I think this is a storyline to watch this season. And we've hinted at this over the course of the year. What the wide receivers do on the flip side on offense to assist the run game. That's a storyline to watch this season.
Definitely.
That I think could go extremely underrated. And I'm specifically talking about the arrival of Brandon Marshall.
Yes.
Because Brandon Marshall is a very good blocker off the edge. Marshall, if they start to improve their running game, which obviously is the hope and something we've been talking about for the last few seasons, while a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, maybe it's because Paul Perkins has a bigger role, he's getting more carries every game, and that may be the case. Perhaps the improvement of the offensive line, the consistency of the offensive line, that would be fair to point out. I don't think a lot of people are going to talk about maybe it's the additional personnel and what the wide receivers are doing off the edge.
I'm with you. I think that people will overlook that, and it's going to be up to folks like us to try to bring it to other folks' attention. And I'll also say this, regardless of whether or not Evan Engram turns out to be a very good blocker as a, quote, tight end, whether he's in line or as an H-back, the one thing I can tell you for sure, he's a big enough, strong enough guy, and he's got the frame and the size that he's going to be able to take out corners and safeties. That's a lock. I mean, whether or not he handles defensive ends and linebackers, that remains to be seen. We don't know the answer to that yet because he hasn't done it, and certainly in college that was not necessarily his forte. But safeties and corners, if he's lining up wide or even if he's in the slot or as an H-back and then they're going to run to that side and he comes out as one of the lead blockers, what corner or safety is going to, you know, right?
Yeah.
That's a tough matchup for them. He's going to be able to knock some people on their butts.
Oh, he's got a great frame. You got the frame, that's step one. Now do you have the desire combined with the frame? And that we're not going to be able to answer until the pads come on. But I think that clearly the optimism is high, and it was interesting. I don't know if you saw, I forget the outlet, Mark Bavaro recently commented on what he thought of Evan Engram.
Just I did not see
him.
This.
Yeah, I forget. I don't know which paper it was. I don't know if he spoke to the Post, the Daily News. We'll double check on that. And he was extremely complimentary of the upside of what he's seen out of Engram. Now, at the same time, Mark said, listen, we have yet to see him in pads. We have yet to see him get extremely physical, but he likes the intangibles that he brings to the table. And that's from a tight end who is known for being well-rounded.
Oh, for sure.
From every dimension whatsoever.
For sure. And I think, you know, what you have to be cautious about or careful about is, you know, Larry Donnell was a big guy. Will Ty has
exactly.
A pretty good frame. And those things did not necessarily translate into the style of play that we're talking about. So we don't know 100% that Ingram's going to be able to do that, but you would expect he would be able to, especially with the attitude that he has shown so far. Coming into this facility, he has done nothing but show an exemplary attitude in terms of, show me what you want me to do. I can't wait to get out there. I mean, even the stuff he's posted on social media, he is extremely excited and happy to do everything and anything, not just catch passes. He doesn't seem like, you know, one of those receiving tight ends who only wants to get his clips on SportsCenter. It looks like he really wants to ingrain himself into the football operation here. And I'm for one, just thrilled to see that, because if he's going to buy into that kind of style of play and he's going to want to be an all-around tight end, well, then the Giants did really well.
Here is what Mark Bavaro had to say. He did speak to the New York Post, as I thought. So this was his comment on Evan Engram. Quote, he's unbelievable. I don't know what he's going to look like in pads and playing football, but he can move, he can run, and he can catch. He's impressive, end quote. And then he went on to discuss just how the position has evolved overall over the course of time, and I think if anybody can weigh in on that, it's certainly a guy like Mark Bavaro, who played during a time where the trenches, the run game was emphasized, specifically here with the Giants, and now you see tight ends, you know, they're essentially the extension of wide receivers in today's game.
You know, the funny part about it, when Bavaro got to the Giants, and this is a true story, and I don't know how much has been written about over the years, they weren't sure about his receiving skills. Swear it to you. They weren't sure. They thought he'd be an okay receiver, but they were thinking more about him being more of a blocker. Now, it turned out he was not only one of the more premier blockers amongst tight ends in the NFL, but he turned out to be, in his day – one of the top three most dangerous receiving tight ends during his era in terms of being clutch, you know, making the big catch, the third down grab, helping Phil Sims out, you know, when they needed a key grab. That developed. I mean, and it was because of his desire and willingness to become an all-around player. That, Lance, you know, that's the thing that so many folks overlook when they say, oh, that guy was a bust, or coaching staff screwed up, or the GM screwed up. A lot of it comes from inside
of
the
course.
Player.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, you got to want to be molded. You're a piece of clay when you come out of college. You got to let the master manipulate you and say, okay, this is what you're going to do for us. Let's make it happen.
It's like I say, a negotiation with a contract, how fans, you know, sometimes they get annoyed the team didn't do enough. And then you have to understand, it takes two to tango.
Yeah.
The player's got to meet the team halfway. The team's got to meet the player halfway. It's the same thing like you said in terms of reaching your true potential. The coach could be energetic, animated, want to get everything out of the player, right,
Absolutely.
Paul?
Absolutely.
The player may not want to meet the coach halfway. So is that then solely on the coaching staff? Is that on the front office? Or perhaps the player has to take on some responsibility? I think you always need to take that into consideration when you look at everything, whether it be the development of a player or even the negotiation of a contract.
Doesn't matter how tasty the sauce. If the guy doesn't want to eat,
here
he's
we
not
go.
Eat.
I was waiting for that food analogy. You delivered. It took us a while to get there. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. We'll also hit on 30 questions in 30 days. Let's start the festivities on the line. Rick is in Florida. Rick, welcome to the program. What do you got for us? How we doing, Rick?
Vic. This is Vic.
Oh,
not
Vic.
Rick.
Excuse
I
me.
Telling
okay.
You guys, Vic.
We all have to clean our ears out. How we doing, Vic? What's happening?
Okay. Listen, this morning I was listening to this guy. I forgot his first name, but his last name is Shaw, okay? And he said he was giving the five most explosive teams in the NFL for 2017. And he named the Green Bay Packers, the Atlanta Falcons, the New England Patriots, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and one more I forgot now. What about the Giants? The Giants got probably one of the best explosive team, questionably on the running game, but they got one of the most explosive team in the NFL. Who's he kidding?
Vic, hold on a second now. And you just alluded to this a minute ago. To be truly explosive, to be an all-around offensive powerhouse, you have to know that there is a running game to lean on. You have to know for a fact that the offensive line is good enough to allow you to open up the playbook and do everything that's in there. And to this point, the Giants have not proven that. Now, I agree with you in that they certainly could be one of the five most explosive teams in the league. That's certainly possible. Heck, a couple of years ago, they were, what, top six in the NFL offensively?
Right.
So they
right.
could get there. But and I'm promising you the line's going to be better. I don't know how much better, but I'm promising you they're going to be better. Are they going to be good enough to be that good? I don't know the answer to that yet. So you can't kill somebody
will.
For leaving them off.
And listen, now, he mentioned Green Bay. I don't think Green Bay's got a great running game. I mean, they got Rodgers. They got a couple of good receivers. But the running game is not as good as other teams.
It's effective enough that they can get the proper balance that they need to carve you up with the pass. Look what they did to the Giants in the second half of the playoff game. They ran it enough and balanced it enough that Rodgers could then have a field day.
Well, and a big part of the Packers' running game, Vic, is also using the running backs as receivers, Aaron Rodgers dumping the ball off. So, you know, they're not a true ground-and-pound type of team. But now I'm looking at the numbers from last season, Vic, and the four teams that you named, the Falcons, the Patriots, the Packers, and the Steelers, are all top 10 in the NFL last year in points per game.
Right.
And then you look at the Giants, and I understand this is more a projection of this season as opposed to what happened last year, but the Giants are coming off a season where they were 26th in the NFL in points per game. So, I mean, it's understandable that perhaps when people are projecting and they're looking forward, they're not going to name the Giants first because they're saying, you know what, the Giants need to show me a little bit more that the points per game are going to go up. Remember, between 2015 and 2016, Vic, and this is what I mean mean by even if you're a fan, you got to at least take the lenses off and look at it big picture perspective. The Giants fell a touchdown down the rankings in terms of points per game. A touchdown. I mean, that's a pretty big gap to
score.
You're talking about 26 points per game in 15 and then 19 in 2016. You can't just overlook that like that's nothing.
Yeah, you know, let me revert back to something that Paul was talking about yesterday. I think you were, too, about the greatest running backs or something like that. I was at 1958. I'm an old guy. I'm 75, okay? I've been a Giants fan for over 55 years, even more than that. I went to the 58 championship game in Yankee Stadium with the Colts versus the Giants. Frank Gifford fumbled the ball twice.
Yeah.
And once the Colts recovered and they scored, and that's how they lost the game. Do you remember
so
that?
So you're suggesting that Gifford should not have been in the all-time NFL draft
about
yesterday?
Because
that was my point.
He was a great ball player.
Well, that was my point.
In that key game, he screwed up.
Well,
forget about that. I think the Giants, I got a gut feel that the Giants are going to win the division. They're going to go in the playoffs, and I think they'll be in the Super Bowl. That's my gut feel. I've been dreaming about it. I've been thinking about it, and I think that they're going to do it. Okay, guys?
Thanks, Vic.
I hope to talk to you again.
Sounds good.
Appreciate the phone call.
Just to refer once again to that call, yesterday we referred to the Monday Morning Quarterback Sports Illustrated piece where they had 12 longtime NFL people conduct an all-time NFL draft, and they went 26 rounds?
Yes, 26 rounds.
And they said, okay, you can draft anybody you want, but you have to have one person at every position by the time you're done. So they had 12 teams made up by the time they were finished, and then they also had a head coach for each team. And Lawrence Taylor was the number one overall pick, and I think everybody agreed with that. But my issue was, to some degree, and I'm not, you know, getting on top of the Empire State Building, beating my chest like King Kong about it, but I did wonder why Sam Huff and Frank Gifford would have been left off that list, because I think they certainly rank among the elite Hall of Famers in Canton.
No, I think that was a fair point, and we also talked about the fact that you're talking about a talent pool where you need to include the greats in today's game because they were available to be drafted. And then we looked up, there were just under 300 players, we figure, that are in the Hall of Fame. So when you take into consideration all of those players, there's going to be a lot of good guys that are not going to be drafted because of the limited spots, as well as you think Hall of Famers would get the edge. But we thought at least Frank Gifford would be in that group.
In fact, I believe Peter King, who was the chief of Monday Morning Quarterback, in the article, if you go to SI.com and Monday Morning Quarterback, you can find it. It's a fascinating look through names that are just like going to just make you just embrace nostalgia, because, you know, I love that stuff.
Yes, well.
But my point to you is, I believe Peter actually asked people to email him and say, would you pick like an also-ran team? Could you put together a starting 22 of guys who we did not draft in our draft? And do you think you could come up with a team as good as any one of our 12?
Sort of the snubs of the snubs.
Yes.
Put together a team.
Now I didn't do it. I simply put up on Twitter, gotta wonder why no Huff and no Gifford. But it would be a fascinating exercise.
That would be.
To go through and try to, you know, sit here and make up a team of 22 and see how well it would stack up.
Well, there's certainly enough great players in NFL history. I don't think you're going to have a problem finding the talent pool. The question is, within the debate on paper, would that team be more impressive than some of the teams that were selected of the 12?
You'd probably find some competitive
teams. Oh, I'm sure you would. Absolutely. Because like I said, I thought one of the things that I thought was overlooked, and we're going to get back to your
phone. And by the way, Adrian Peterson did not get picked.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of current players that easily you'd want on your team. But one of the things that I thought was overlooked in terms of the trend of the draft, I would have been more heavy focused on the offensive linemen going early. Because as we talked about, there were so many skilled position players in the history of the the NFL, I'd wait. I'll get my quarterback. I'll get my wide receivers. I would have went hard for the trenches. And it didn't happen until the sixth round when they actually started to focus on the offensive linemen. So everybody's got a different focus when you make up a fantasy draft. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Dan in the Poconos. Dan, what's happening?
Yeah, fellas, I hope my cell connection holds up for me.
Great.
You're clear.
Hope so.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys. I never miss a show. Only once in a blue moon I get a chance to give you guys a
call. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in.
Oh, man, where would a diehard guy be without you guys? I mean, I don't know how I'd live when the show wasn't on, because I'm in my 50s. I've been a diehard for years and years and years, but, I mean, not like just like, you know, we just all feed off you guys. But anyway, I just wanted to touch on what John and Lance were talking last week with the guy from Dallas, whose first name was Mickey, I believe.
Yeah, Mickey Spagnola from DallasCowboys.com.
Yeah, one caller called up, said he was a little bit on the arrogant side, and I kind of seen that too a bit. I think it's just the cowboy nature, they're just their way. But he was saying two things that I'm just, like, mind-boggled by. And one thing, I didn't look this up or anything. He said that their defense was number two against the run. Was I hearing things when he said that?
Well, I don't remember what he said, but I know I'll look it up. They were very high in terms of the rankings in terms of stopping the run. Now, part of that is, keep in mind, their secondary struggled. So if you're going to go up against the Cowboys, you're bound to throw the ball against them more so than you are to run, and that's why I think it helped the rankings. But they were much more effective in stopping the run than the pass.
And,
that's accurate.
And also, because they won so many games, they were ahead in a lot of fourth quarters, so teams had to throw.
Oh, that's fair. You have to take that into consideration.
So there's always, again, this is that deal I try to tell you about. These a lot of analytics people, they don't get the full picture. You know, they're just giving you numbers, and you can't do that in the National Football League because the NFL is a spider web. It is a table of dominoes. Every one thing affects multiple other things. You can't just single one thing out. It's just not fair. And by the way, let me just defend Mickey. He doesn't need defense. I think Mickey Spagnuolo is probably one of the better NFL beat guys in the league. I have great respect for him. He's not only a great guy, but he's a very, very knowledgeable football man who's been around a lot of years. So I would beg to differ, and I don't know how your conversation went with him on the show.
I didn't have an issue at all with him.
But I don't know him to have any conceit or arrogance. I just think he's really good at what he does, and he loves what he does, much like I do.
And I'll let you continue, Dan. I mean, I just brought the numbers up. Dallas finished last season number one, actually, in the NFL against the run. They surrendered 84 yards per game.
Yeah, because they were going up about 10 attempts a game, right? I mean, everyone's throwing the ball.
In terms of the amount of carries that they saw per game, let's see. They saw, in terms of the...
No, I believe the fewest. Fewest amount of rushing attempts. Fewest amount of rushing attempts per game.
Just over 21 a game is how many rushing attempts they saw. Yeah. So they were allowing just under 4 yards per carry. If you think that's a better stat to judge how effective a running game is, they were just under 4 yards per carry. So that would have put them – let me see where that would have put them in terms of
probably decent
yardage per carry.
Right.
These rankings would cooperate here. That would have put them eighth. That's still impressive.
Top eight in the NFL. That's good.
So maybe that should be the number you look at because of the lack of carries as well as the lack of yardage per game. The fact that they were only giving up less than 4 yards per carry, and that put them tied for eighth in the NFL. I mean, I think that's a pretty good gauge.
Well, I'm not going to badmouth the guy because he did sound like a gentleman, and he did sound like he knew what he was talking about. So I got to give it to him on that. It's just my hatred for the Cowboys. You know, it just comes out. I don't know what it
is. Understandable. Listen, they're a team within the division. I think if you asked Eagles, Redskins, and Cowboys fans the same thing, they'd say that about their division rivals.
I'm telling you. Yep, we're very passionate as football fans. He did say one thing that sounded crazy. He says how he was whenever you guys touched on the fact that on the defense, how all those players have left and they got all these new guys and rookies, and he was always saying about how their depth is doing so well. I'm like, yeah, but what about your starters? Sure, you got great depth, but you got nobody starting, you know? So it was kind of funny. He was harping on the depth a lot of times.
Well, he did. I mean, from what I recall, and we covered an awful lot in that conversation. I mean, we must have went almost about a half hour with Mickey because there was so much to talk about with the Cowboys. I mean, one of the things that he did point out was, there's still a huge question mark in terms of their pass rush. And he laid out all of the guys, even on the back end, that they don't even know if they're going to be reliable. I mean, DeMontre Moore we brought up, he's now with the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to try to carve out a role.
Right.
Remains to be seen whether or not he'll even make the team. So they have a lot of juggling to do in terms of who's going to start on the defensive line, who's playing behind. And I know Paul and I have broken down the secondary a lot. I think that there's some unknown commodities in the Dallas secondary that he could get some opportunities, like a Jeff Heath at safety. And then, yes, there's also some veterans that are going to get some opportunities, but they've been hit or miss. Nolan Carroll, for example. I mean, Nolan Carroll's a polished veteran. He's been with a number of teams in the NFL. But, you know, he's been hit or miss throughout his career, and that's one of the guys they're going to rely on. So, I mean, I think, right. I mean, from what I recall, Dan, in fairness, I thought Mickey laid out there were a lot of question marks in terms of the Cowboys' defense,
just
as much as there were last season.
It's a very unbalanced team, okay?
Yeah.
Very top-heavy on offense, and they're going to have to win games, okay? And they're the ones who mastered this several years ago, where they knew their defense was weak and suspect, and they basically said offensively, we're going to grind and grind and grind and grind, control you with our offensive line, run the football, control the clock, dominate time of possession and the number of snaps, try not to make any mistakes, make a few big plays on offense, and oh, by the way, when our defense is on the field, they're just going to be out there for a little while anyway, so we're going to be able to cover up that deficiency. They mastered that several years ago when they made the playoffs.
Time of possession.
And you know, that's what they're going to have to do again. They've done it once before. That usually, it's the smartest way to go when your roster is constructed as their roster is. It is the smartest way to go. But in general, that is the percentage of success is much lower. You know, you'd much rather have a more balanced team. You'd much rather have a stronger defense than a stronger offense. There's no question about that.
Well, but the way it works effectively is, and what's been the constant for them, and I was having this conversation on Twitter yesterday, is their run game, Paul. When you can consistently run the football, you win time of possession. So we're talking about a team that was top two in the NFL last year in rushing yards per game, and now I'm bringing up time of possession. Dallas, this should not surprise anybody, number two in time of possession. They coincide with one another.
You know.
And the personnel has changed in the backfield, but it's still been a constant. So, you know, if you can run the football in this league, even though everybody focuses on the pass, it does wonders for the rest of your team.
I wonder where I heard that before.
Yes, I know.
Run the football.
There you
somebody
go.
Somebody says that on this show all the time.
Yeah,
I don't know who.
I may have heard it in passing.
And I will add this. They got a kicker who has a cannon of a leg. He's oh, my God. Goodness.
Dan Bailey.
What a tremendous advantage to that philosophy when you know that your kicker can get you points from virtually anywhere on the field. And not only can he get them from anywhere on the field, he's virtually unmistakable. I mean, he doesn't miss. So
that's been critical, too. Special teams as well. And, Dan, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for tuning in. 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for checking in with us here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, focusing on a number of different topics. We started off talking about Pro Football Focus's rankings, the top secondaries in the NFL. Giants number one. And if you want to break it down and you want to look at the criteria, I recommend that you take a look at that. But I think it's also important to note, and for those of you who, you know, sometimes get animated that this team doesn't get enough respect, this unit doesn't get enough respect, Paul, before we get to the phone calls, my biggest takeaway when I look at those rankings is the fact it's amazing how the league as a whole now looks at the Giants secondary compared to what we were having this conversation about a year ago. That, to me, I think is the biggest takeaway, because we're looking at NFL.com's rankings. We're looking at Pro Football Focus. I think people have caught on that the secondary, forget the defense overall, the secondary has made a number of strides, and there's still a number of young guys in this unit. Let's not forget about that.
I know we got these calls to get to. I'm only going to make this point, and it'll be really quick. With all of the accolades the Giants secondary gets, with all of the accolades that they're rebuilt offense seems to be getting, specifically their passing game with Brandon Marshall, and everybody knows about Sterling Shepard and Beckham and Eli, and everybody seems to love Ingram. Those facets, those individual elements seem to be getting a tremendous amount of ink. Snacks gets a ton of ink. JPP and Vernon for their pass rush gets a ton of ink. For all of those accolades, why is it that rarely do you see anybody pick the Giants to win the division? Most people that I see still think the Cowboys are going to win the NFC East, which is laughable to me, because how can you have so many accolades for so many of the Giants' individual units and then not pick them to win the division? Doesn't make sense.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that overall, probably if you ask most people, they'd say that on paper, the Giants have the most impressive defense in the division. And I think that most people would back that. I think despite the firepower on offense and some of the additions, once again, I'm going back to the numbers in 2016. And we've seen seasons, in fairness, Paul, where the Giants have looked really good on paper and it hasn't always translated to the field. So I think that that is some of the takeaways that perhaps people are taking into consideration, whereas Dallas over the last few years, in fairness, even if maybe their talent hasn't been better or more attractive than the Giants on paper, more often than not, the points have been consistent and the running game has been consistent. So people maybe have more faith that that's going to translate to the football field, and maybe there's a little bit more doubt with respect to the Giants. And that, to me, is maybe my biggest takeaway based on what you're seeing as to why the Giants haven't been selected as the favorite for the division.
Well, let's just say this. The Dallas Cowboys have made the playoffs three times in the last 10 years. 9 years. I mean, two of the last three, yes, but only three times since they made it in 2007. You know, so for me, I'm not mailing in Dallas going to the playoffs.
No, I don't think anybody's a lock in this division.
No, I think lot of people give them a step ahead, though, because they're saying, as you just said, well, you know, look at their ability to put points on the board. You know, they got Prescott, they got Elliott, and they overshadow all of their deficiencies. They've got more questions on their team than the Giants do. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
They have more question marks on defense. I don't think they have as many question marks on offense, though. I think they have question marks on defense, much more than the Giants. I don't look at Dallas and I say overwhelming questions on offense.
We know that Dak Prescott's going to be really good this year.
We don't. But you know what? I can't. In fairness, though, when anybody talks about the sophomore slump, I mean, you can say the same thing about Carson Wentz. I could have a veteran quarterback that has a down year too if things don't go right. So
that
is true. Even if you have a veteran quarterback, they're not guaranteed to duplicate 2016.
That is true. Except that Prescott's only going into his second year now. People have a full year of tape on him.
The sample size is small,
and he's got to show now he's going to have to adjust to them. You know, a veteran quarterback has already proven that he can adjust. So I do think it's a little bit different. Jason Witten's going to get old at some point. He's got to, doesn't
he? Already getting up there.
Doesn't
he?
Doesn't he? Retire already, will you please?
Yeah. I don't even know if age is something you should even bring up into the conversation.
Do we even want to talk about possible disciplinary action for some superstar running back on that team? Just saying.
Well, we were discussing that and hinting at that yesterday, and I think that's the interesting part of the conversation, though. My point is, though,
stop picking him to win a division, folks. It's not going to happen.
With that, though, I think he hit on an interesting point. I personally look at track record in that department, and DeMarco Murray, as well as Darren McFadden, have flourished in that system. So the way that I look at it is, yes, that's a significant loss if he has to miss time, but they've also been able to have success with other running backs. It reminded me of it, and we brought this up yesterday.
Denver. Yeah, they could have another 1,000-yard back, yeah. But they're not going to have the kind of impact that Elliott had if he has to miss time.
Well, it's more of running out the clock, short yard situations, and we also touched on that.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to repeat everything we brought up yesterday, but all of those things you have to take into consideration. Let's head back to the lines. Christian's in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
How you doing, Christian?
I'd rather talk more about what you were just talking about with people picking Dallas to win the division. I feel like even with everything the Giants added this year, there's just a possibility that it looks exactly the same because of the same couple crucial offensive linemen that they didn't replace. And you know, I'd like to think that they're improved also, but I mean, you might there's a chance that you might basically end up running the Eric Flowers offense again, where the ball has to come out in, 2 seconds, and I think for that reason, everyone's still picking Dallas or occasionally the Eagles or Redskins, but because we did make huge upgrades at other spots, but just kind of left two spots alone that really affected the offense so much last year with those tackles. But I mean, I'd really like to think they've improved just for all the work they've put in this summer.
Well, I think you make a good point, because most people are gun shy about the Giants offensive line, and those people who set the odds and who make those predictions and are experts all around the country talking about the NFL, they haven't been here at the Giants facility like we have. You know, we've been here every day. We know what's gone into this off-season program. We know how these guys have prepared the foundation for improvement. For anybody who's been outside this building, they don't know. They haven't seen it. I'm asking you basically to have blind faith and trust in me when I tell you that I have seen the cement poured for the foundation of improvement on this offensive line. And I'm asking you for your faith in that because I've seen it every day. You guys haven't, nor have any of the experts, nor have any of the people in Las Vegas. So if you want to tell me that they need to see the proof in the pudding, I understand that. That part of it is absolutely true. If you're not here to see it, how are you supposed to believe it? I get that.
Right.
I get that.
And I think that was clever of Eric Flowers to pick up martial arts just to...
Well, Justin Pugh and an offensive line coach, Mike Solari, strongly encouraged him to do so, and he did follow through. And I think it's going to make a world of difference.
Right. I mean, that just, you know, really helps your ability to, you know, make contact. And, you know, so I'm excited about that. And, you know, also that he's lost a little bit of weight. He can just be a little bit quicker, hopefully, you know, but just in theory.
Yeah, well, he said all the right things. He's shown that he's committed. So now it's a matter of translating it all to the football field. And Eric Flowers has said that himself. When he met with the media towards the end of minicamp, he said, listen, I've done everything that they've asked. I've done everything that I've wanted to do this offseason, but I still have to show it. So he understands that too. I mean, we've talked about this at great length throughout the course of the offseason. I think that the speculation needs to end. He gets out there during training camp, and now it's an opportunity for show me time. I think it's simple as that. All right, Christian.
Right.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. How about Dave in New Jersey? Dave, what's happening?
How are you guys?
Doing well, Dave. What do you got for us?
I want to agree with everybody else. This is the only time during the day I shut off all every sports other radio shows.
And, thank you.
And listen to you guys, and I try to tell everyone else, too, as well. So,
appreciate it.
I still want to go back to, and you guys are very balanced, maybe not Paul so much, but we love you for that. but, you know, back to the conversation, you know, with Mickey from Dallas. And here's the point that I think I had the hardest problem with him and what he had to say. And other people have brought it up. And that is their whole view on the secondary. They're making it out to sound. And this goes into the projections, Paul, that you were just talking about in terms of how people are looking at Dallas. And I think you said it very well in terms of the strength of that team and the holes that they have. And that is they want to give you this impression that they remade this secondary as if this was part of some grand scheme, right? This wasn't part of a grand scheme. This was the fact that Dallas couldn't control their spending and kept pushing cap dollars forward and forward and didn't have the flexibility to keep some strategic players in that secondary. That secondary gave our team fits at different points, particularly they got up for playing against Odell.
They did.
Most teams do.
Yep.
But they really got up for playing Odell. And they played us tough. If you look last year and you go watch the tape, which I've done a couple times, you know, they played us very strong. I'm telling you right now, simple question. The Cowboys, the Giant receivers going into opening day are going to sit there and say, we're happy with the matchups that we're looking across the field compared to a year, the last two matchups we
Agreed.
Had to go through.
Agreed.
The only thing I will add to that, though, when everybody does talk about that the Cowboys have revamped their secondary, to me, the more significant changes have come at safety, much more so than at corner. And the reason I say that, Anthony Brown, he played a lot of snaps last year. Now, he's still young, but he was on the field, even in those Giants games. Orlando Scandrick is still there, and he's their slot corner. And then, thirdly, you know, Byron Jones, who's played corner and safety in their defense, is also still around. So maybe revamped is not even a proper term. I think they tweaked their secondary. I don't really – because honestly, I see a lot of familiar players. To say that everybody's gone and nobody's back, to me, is misleading, because they're still going to be throwing out a lot of the usual suspects
right,
out there.
But let me just say this. For a secondary that certainly doesn't look like it's much better, okay – let's just say
of course,
that.
Well, that remains to be seen.
Let's just say that projection-wise, they don't lose any ground. But they're certain. I don't think they're going to be appreciably better. I think they're going to be worse. But let's just say they're what they were last year with the minimal changes back there that you're trying to present to us. Well, this is a passing game, right? The NFL's become a passing league. So they really haven't done much to improve their secondary, and their pass rush is ridiculously thin. How in the world does somebody come up with the odds, as of a month ago, Dallas is 8-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is right behind the New England Patriots as second in the NFL, and the Giants are 20-1? You've got to be kidding me. When the Giants have Vernon and JPP rushing the passer, they've got the, quote, best secondary in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus and most other people. They got the best corners in the league, okay? They got Snacks clogging up the middle. They got that. And the Giants are 20-1, and the Cowboys are 8-1. You've got to be kidding me. You don't need to be a mathematician to understand that's a joke.
Well, and I think a lot of that goes back to the hype machine. I mean, is it not? In terms of popularity? Court of public opinion, as opposed to actually X's.
I mean, you know, most people are of the opinion outside this building, I think, that the Giants literally go to the ShopRite and grab five people from the checkout counter and put them on the offensive line. The opinion of the Giants offensive line around the country is that these guys are supermarket checkout guys.
Why
it's ShopRite? It's not that bad.
Is ShopRite your go-to store? I'm just curious.
Well,
why
it's a Jersey. It's a Jersey
okay,
supermarket
right,
chain. Okay.
I just wanted.
But
I
mean,
that's all.
I agree. They don't run block well. They got to get better. But they didn't just pick these guys up off the street. They're not that horrific that you got to come up with these odds. This is ridiculous. Go to Vegas and make yourself a bunch of money, my friend.
Paul, it's great to hear, because you don't hear this any other place, and I couldn't agree with you more. My other point, Paul, that I'd like to have you comment on, Lance, as well, is when you look at the tape from last year, to me the bigger issue that they addressed is at the tight end position and the blocking on the edge in the tight end position. And so often fans don't appreciate the blocking schemes that are going on, and I think that the bigger issue for changing the running game and a lot of the other pass protection are, you know, our tight end last year just could not block the edge over and over and over again. And that's the position that I think that they changed the most, which is what gives me a lot of hope going into the season. I'd love to get your comments on that.
I think we all are in agreement that Red Ellison was a huge acquisition. I still think he might have been the most underrated acquisition of the offseason for the Giants.
Well, and I think it goes even further than that. And, Dave, we're going to let you go. Do appreciate the phone call.
Thanks so much for
tuning in. You got it. I think it also goes beyond Ellison. The depth on this team at tight end, Paul, if I look at the roster over the last few seasons, and forget the 53, I'm just talking about the guys in camp, I see a lot more depth. I see a lot more upside. I see a lot more potential. I'll give you an example, and I understand it's show-me time for him, but I'm very high on Matt Lacoste. I know you were high since the day
three
he
years
in
ago.
The building. But
love
now,
the kid.
Now I look at it, okay, he's healthy. He's got a great opportunity to make the roster because of perhaps their needs and the void they're looking to fill, specifically at the fullback position, which he could play too, mm-hmm. going back to college. And that's a guy that if he makes the team, I mean, he may be the third or the fourth tight end. And to have somebody like that who also is a good red zone target from what we've seen in workouts with Eli Manning, I mean, that is an intriguing prospect to at least discuss. In addition to Ellison, plus you have Engram, you have guys that are going to push one another. So that alone, I think, is different than part of the storylines and the narratives that we talked about in previous seasons.
Simply put, it's all about competition, because guys who were fighting to be the first and second tight ends on the depth chart a couple of years ago, even last year, are now fighting to be 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And that's what that says. The competition here, they've now drafted and signed two frontline starters between Ellison and Engram at tight end. And when you create that kind of competition, you're a better team.
Will Tye, who was the main starter last season. Like you said, I mean, people are not even talking about whether or not he's going to be number one on the depth chart. People are wondering, you know, where does he now factor into the equation? So
he might have to fight to make the team.
Well, that, I think, says a lot about the depth at that position. When
no
you're
doubt.
Talking about the starter from the previous year not being a lock.
And they might even keep four.
Exactly. So, I mean, that to me is promising. And then you take into consideration, as the caller alluded to, the blocking aspect. Ellison, his MO during the course of his career with the Vikings, blocking. There's a reason why Adrian Peterson succeeded. He was one of the
Peterson
guys
loved him.
That was opening the lane. So that, at least, is something that you hope he can now bring to the Giants. All right, let's head back to the lines. Ken is in New Jersey. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, fellas. How we doing today?
Hi.
Doing well, Ken. What do you got for us?
I want to apologize. I'm the culprit. I called in last Thursday and said the Dallas Cowboys guy sounded a little arrogant. So I'm the culprit. I apologize.
No problem.
We'll let Mickey know.
Yeah, we're gonna give him your handle, your telephone number. Our screeners are writing down the number right
we'll
now.
We'll talk to him by now before opening day. He's a good man.
Yeah, yeah. No, I figured you guys are all friends. He just sounded a little arrogant to me. It's probably my bias for the Giants. But you guys are right about one thing. Absolutely nobody is picking the Giants to win the division. I've seen Eagles, I've seen Cowboys, and that's all I've seen. But with Ezekiel Elliott, if he's not suspended week one, there's some questions to be had, because this is not the first incident he's had this particular offseason. He exposed a woman by pulling down her blouse, and I have the sports package,
and
the only people that cared was TMZ.
The only thing I'll tell you about this whole thing is that, you know, the Cowboys, and I'm with Lance, yes, they're going to still run the ball. That line is still a high-quality line. They're not going to change their overall philosophy. I mean, why should they? All right, they've still got some competent backs in that backfield.
Two veterans, yeah.
However, it will impact their chances to be an elite team or a true Super Bowl contender, in my opinion. I still think they're a playoff contender, but I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender if he has to miss a significant amount of time. I just don't. Because what we know is, even if he only – let's just say he misses a month, and a couple of losses in that month cost them a seeding in the playoffs, that could be enough to short circuit a trip to the Super Bowl. That's what happens in this league. Seeding and matchups is what determines your fate a lot of times in January.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I really don't mind if Zeke's in there. We stuffed Zeke last year.
That's true too.
I don't want to hear the excuses from Cowboys fans saying, "Oh, you only won because Zeke wasn't in." But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, the Cowboys get too much credit, in my opinion. The Cowboys get things spoon-fed to them. We have to start on the road in their house yet again. I feel like Jerry Jones pays people off. Three out of the first four games we play this year, our first quarter, we have one home game. Not only that, last year
two. New Orleans and Washington, weeks two and three are home.
Yeah, on the road week one and then two straight home games.
Oh, no, wait a minute. That's last year's.
Oh, we are looking at last year. I'm sorry.
Wait, I put the 17 schedule up there. Where is it?
Apparently somebody's playing games here. It was taken down already.
Somebody took down our schedule.
Let me bring up the – I'll bring
the
up the
Giants schedule. Are playing Detroit in the home opener. And the reason
Monday night game.
That's a primetime game.
They do have three of their first four on the road.
Yes.
But here's the thing. The schedule balances out, Ken. I mean, I get your point. You're still going to play eight games at home and eight games at road.
Yeah, I understand. But where it balances, it's just like last year. We're playing multiple teams multiple weeks in a row coming off of their bye.
That's the one thing about the schedule. If you really want to complain about something, and let's face it, every single team in the league will have complaints about their schedule.
Yeah.
The question is, how many do you have and how significant are they? And then balanced out the scale to how many good things you like about the schedule. I've said this before on the program. I'll say it one more time and maybe even a few more times before the season starts. Getting Dallas
like
on the road
one.
Opening day is great. You
yeah,
want
I know
that.
I like that because it is defense.
It's sweet. It's basically giving you a win on a silver platter. They should go down there and wipe the Cowboys off the field. That should be an absolute win. That's a great thing for them, I think.
See, I'm of the opposite mindset. I'd rather see the division matchups later, but
yeah, I think so this year. But previously, it was start.
It's all about this year. The history's not important anymore. It's about this year. What do you want to accomplish now?
Oh well, Now I don't understand why we're not getting the respect we're getting. I don't understand why Eli is always bottom half of the league, according to Pro Football Focus and every analyst in the planet.
Analytics again.
Well, but Ken, you know, I my philosophy is the same. It's rankings. Who cares? I mean, at the end of the day, you got to play the games. Like, I mean, all this chatter leading up to the season is meaningless. No, no, you don't win the division based on what a writer on NFL.com is saying.
They're fun to talk about. That's all.
I'll tell you who cares. I told you guys this before. The people that buy the Madden video game care because Pro Football Focus is what makes the rankings for that game. And if you play with the Giants, you're going to stink because Eli Manning gets.
Well,
no respect.
I mean, but Ken,
hence, I don't play Madden.
Yeah, I mean,
okay?
Ken, really, you know, I mean, are we appealing to the 15-year-olds or are we appealing to guys, you know,
that care about
what happens on Sundays? Come on.
No, I play. You know? I play in competition. I'm top 5% in the world.
All right, there you go.
Well,
good for you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's entitled to their passion.
I'm sticking with the real game on the field,
and I'm with Paul, and appreciate the phone call, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
So you know that's why I don't really lose much sleep over rankings. One thing, though, and this is what I mean about trying to be open-minded. I'm bringing up the Cowboys' schedule because
what do you got?
After they host the Giants, they're at Denver and at Arizona in back-to-back weeks, which is not necessarily an easy schedule there in terms of back-to-back road games.
Quite frankly, I could easily see them being 0-3.
So the point, so well, I mean, whatever they become, the point is that gets challenging after the home opener. Just like you could say another team that may start on the road and then gets a few home games.
They catch a break in that Denver really doesn't have a quarterback right now, but they could still easily wind up being.
Great defense.
They do, and that's why I'm saying they could still be 0-3 coming out of those first three games.
And Arizona could
especially if Elliott's not there.
And Arizona, I could see, have a really big bounce back here.
Sure. Absolutely.
Them being healthy. And here's another way to look at it. Remember, the Giants last year, didn't we talk about how after the London game, how the schedule opened up nicely? And the Giants took advantage of it. Remember, they were playing the Bears,
without
the
question.
Browns, the Eagles, teams with question marks. They took advantage
of it. They had a stretch there where I think it was 5 out of 6 weeks they were home or had a bye. Well, it's right there. It's somebody left the damn old schedule on the board.
We had the new one open.
Yeah, five out of six. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4. Four out of five games.
Philly, Cincy,
home,
Chicago, at Cleveland.
Home, 4 out of 5, home. With the bye week in there as well, and the only road game was in London. And it wasn't really a road game. It was a neutral site game. That was beautiful.
And it actually,
beautiful.
It actually seemed to be more like a Giants home game, considering
it
how many people came out.
Clearly worked out in their favor. I'm one of those people who actually do believe the logistics of the schedule do have an impact on your season. And I like the Giants schedule this year a lot.
All right, let's head back to the lines. Charlie's in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
What's up?
Hey, I think the reason why, you know, the Giants aren't predicted to win the division, I think it's pretty obvious. There's two things. One is we couldn't score any points last year. And a big part of that is our offensive line. And the other part of that is McAdoo. Can McAdoo call the plays that's going to utilize all the great players that he has on this offensive team this year? Can he call the plays that it's going to, you know, utilize these people? And we don't know the answer to that yet. So I think that's part of the reason why they don't pick the Giants. They know we got a great defense, but they don't. They got a big question mark about our offense. And I think that's pretty much that. And you were talking about Zeke. I have to agree with Lance. If Zeke's only going to be out for 1 or 2 games, it's not going to – you know, be that big of a deal for Dallas. Of course, if he's out for longer than that, then it is going to be a big deal. But for us, I would rather have Zeke in the lineup because we know he's going to get the ball at least 90%, 85%, 95% of the time. He's not going to go out for passes very often. But if you put in McFadden, we don't know what they're going to do with him. He can run.
McFadden's more of a receiver.
He can certainly catch
passes.
That's
a fair point.
And what is our biggest weakness on our defense? Linebackers, covering running backs coming out of the backfield. To me, we will be more unbalanced because we won't know what they're going to do. They will be more unpredictable than if Zeke is in the lineup. So I would rather have him in the game number one. That's just my opinion.
I think that's a very interesting way to look at it, Charlie. I mean, I'm looking at it more that no matter who's been in the backfield, with the consistency of the line they've pretty much produced on the ground. But you're right, McFadden, because of his MO throughout his career, has been utilized as a receiver much more so than what Elliott did as a rookie. There's a little bit more of a guessing game. Alfred Morris, when he's in, I think you pretty much know he's going to run the ball. Does not have a lot of receptions in his career, but McFadden is more of a jack of all trades back, so there becomes the versatility factor that you have to take into consideration. I think
valid
that's a very
point.
Fair point.
Yeah. Valid point.
That's it, Chuck. Wow, we got you speechless.
No, I thought Paul was going to say something.
I think it's a valid point to bring up, but it's something the Giants need to be aware of as they're, you know, constructing their defensive scheme. That, oh my goodness, the ball may be spread around more, and McFadden may be asked to do some more things than Elliott would do. I think that's absolutely valid, but I also think the Giants' defense and Spagnuolo are up to the task.
But also, I think it will open up for Dak to run more too. He might use his feet more, and that would be more scary to me. But anyway, just to go on, I you guys were talking about, like, the best five running backs from Giants a couple of days ago, whatever it was. But you guys left out Ron Johnson. I thought, I don't know if he'd be in the top five, but he's got to be right there coming up because he had a couple of thousand-yard seasons. And from line of scrimmage, he had, I think, 2,000 or 3,000-yard season. So he was a really good running back for us that we hadn't seen in a long time when he came along. So, and the other thing was, is guess who on the, you know, the greatest players of all time, Joe Thomas, was on that list. And he was up there pretty darn high. I mean, that guy is a great left tackle, and we should have gone.
Are you talking about the draft? The all-time
the all-time. Something about Joe Thomas.
Where did Joe Thomas go? I didn't even notice that.
Oh, he was high. He was like in like 20 or 18 or he was up there. He was up there for a left tackle. Or, you know, it was just amazing that he even made it, but he made it. And that's the guy we need on our offensive line. I still go out and trade for him. I don't care. Give him a number one next year. That will change the whole
69.
Dynamics.
69, Joe Thomas.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Very high. Very, very high. Yeah. I might have taken Jonathan Ogden before him.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I would take him right now. I would trade for him because that's what we need, Paul.
We know that's been well documented, Charlie.
Like
thank you Charlie.
Super Bowl. Okay, guys.
All right, Charlie.
One more
call? Yes. Charlie never has to make a case as to why he wants an offensive lineman. I think you just go back to any show he's ever called in, and you understand the rationale behind what he's saying. Mark is in Chicago. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, boys. How you doing?
Hi.
Looking forward to a legitimate Super Bowl run this year. I'm very excited.
Cool.
Anyway, I wanted to actually sort of follow up on that MMQB draft rankings article.
Yeah.
One, I think if you're in the Hall of Fame, you ought to be on that list and figure out a reason why you shouldn't be. And then the second thing is, I don't believe any current player should be on any list. You know, let their career pan out and let the chips fall where they may. But in any case, you can discuss that. But what I really wanted to say is two people that I think should have been on there. And one was Bart Starr. The guy maybe didn't have the numbers, but he was playing for the all-time coach on that list, took him to 5 championships and 2 Super Bowls, and he isn't on the list. And that confounds me. I don't understand it. And, Paul, you brought up a few weeks ago, he was a field general. He called his own plays. He looked at the assets that he had. He looked at the defense, and he took him down the field, and they scored. And I don't get it. Maybe you have a comment on that. I also wanted to talk about Frank Gifford for a second.
I might have put Starr ahead of Aikman, who was the last quarterback drafted in their draft. I certainly could have seen Starr over Aikman, but the other QBs who were taken, pretty hard to pull any of one of those. You know, Unitas, Otto Graham, Tom Brady, Joe Montana, John Elway, Roger Staubach, Peyton Manning, Bradshaw, Rodgers, Favre, Marino, Aikman.
Well, I would take him over Rodgers. I would take him over Favre, and I'd take him before Staubach, just because of the results that he had in his career. So that's one of those arguable points.
Tough one. But I'm certainly taking him over Aikman.
Yeah. The other thing was last week, and Charlie brought it up. Somebody brought up the top running backs in Giants history, and I want you to thump Lance right now because they brought up Tiki, which I understand. But they were starting to talk about Joe Morris and Rodney Hampton, and I'm like, dude, Trent Gifford's in the Hall of Fame. He was an MVP one year. How do you even put that in the same discussion?
Well,
I understand he was
a
receiver
the reason,
part-time.
I remember the conversation, Mark, in fairness, and the reason why we weren't sure whether or not Frank Gifford even belongs on that list is because Gifford, and Paul and I talked about this yesterday, played so many different positions, I don't think it's right to just classify him as a running back. Right. Whereas those other guys, if you want to have a true discussion about the best running backs for the Giants in their history, I'd rather focus on guys that solely played the running back position.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
think you're looking too much at the stats. I mean, you have to look at the context of what the league was back then.
Yeah,
there's
no question. Look,
and he threw for 14 touchdowns and a halfback.
Here's what I'll say to you. I will say there's no question that Frank Gifford's one of the top five Giants of all time, regardless of position. But if you're just going to narrow the scope of your question to a position, you know, you could certainly make the arguments about Rodney Hampton and about Joe Morris and about Tiki's obviously number one. I'm sorry, but Tiki is number one. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind about that. And so for that reason, I'm gonna defend my coworkers on this one, because I think you could certainly say that Gifford's career was splintered in enough of different directions that you can't put him quite at the top of any one particular list. I think it's a very fair comment.
Yeah.
Well, I think the one thing you also ought to consider is that, except for the last 3 years of his career, he played in 12 games. He didn't play in 16 games.
No question. Understood.
Well, with the concussions, too, is something. But, I mean, in fairness, you know, Ahmad Bradshaw missed games, too, but at least we know he was solely a running back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's guys that have all been sidelined over the course of their careers.
Yeah, you just want to say running back. You could certainly put Bradshaw ahead of Gifford. You certainly could.
Well, and I did when we were putting that
list together. And I don't have a problem with you saying that. But Bradshaw is not one of the top five Giants of all time. Frank Gifford is.
But that's a different conversation.
Yes.
Much different conversation. Yeah.
Good discussion, boys.
You got it, Mark.
Enjoy the show.
Appreciate the phone call. Before we wrap up, I just want to get to one tweet or two real quick, which is valid because it's about the current roster. So we do want to bring it back to the current terms of the team. And this comes from Christopher Knowles at Christo. And then it looks like he's giving away his television account, 563-333-528. Have we seen the ceiling of Devon Kennard? And is this a show-me-something year for him? Now, Kennard flashed late last season when they started to move him down to the line of scrimmage a bit. It'll be very interesting to see how they utilize him with this defense as Spags returns again to the mix. I mean, have we seen the ceiling of Devon Kennard? I don't know if we've seen the ceiling, Paul. I'm not convinced that we've seen the ceiling. Part of it has been because, remember, he's been banged up during the course of his career.
He missed a lot of games during the first 4 years of his Giants tenure, so I'm going to say there's still a little more there.
But I think that this is somewhat of a show-me year for him. I think that would be a fair label.
I think it's fair to say that if there is any upward progression this season, this would be considered his top-off season. This should be his career year. This should be his prime year. You better hope so.
Well, and then I think you also need to take into consideration, remember, he was drafted in 2014, so he's now entering the fourth and final year of his contract. So what better year to make a statement,
no doubt,
to give the team a reason to want to bring you back or perhaps bring up your standing across the rest of the league. So we'll certainly get into more of that. That's part of the 30 questions in 30 days. Show me opportunities across the board.
Yep.
Guys that have a lot to prove, and I think Kennard is certainly in that conversation. We appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow, noon Eastern, as we'll get to more of your phone calls and more of your tweets. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.